Business success usually comes to those who are too busy to be looking for it. Join RVK for the award-winning RV on Business Show every Tuesday at 12 midday. It's not about thinking out of the box. There is no box. Only on 101.9 Chai FM.
Welcome to 101.9 Chai FM. It is 11 minutes past 12. Excuse me. Thank you so much for joining me once again. It was great to be in South Africa for a week and a half last week and so or so. I wasn't in Joburg much, but it was really special to be back, ready to be back immersed in South African commerce, just seeing how certain industries are running. I spent a lot of time in the mining industry, and it was just an absolute eye-opener. I've been very involved in that industry for a long time, but just to see it once again, how well managed it is in certain areas, how effective it is in changing communities and uplifting communities, how basic salaries are really robust and healthy, housing schemes are up and coming that will really afford people proper housing that they can be proud of, that can bring their families up in, and it is really affordable and well-built and well-costed. And then I came back to Israel, and I must say I was a little bit apprehensive, as I usually am, especially with the war that's been going on, the ceasefire, and just to see how things are holding. When you're out of it for even a short while, you tend to feel a little bit out of touch. But yesterday afternoon, I got to spend the afternoon with a group of 60 South African youths who had come to the vineyard after they had been to Nova, to Sderot, to the sites of the massacre that happened on the 7th of October and the days thereafter. And they then came to the website, and this is a common event where youth groups come, or groups come from having been down south. They come to the website, which is just at the northern tip of the Negev Desert. So we're still in the desert, but we are in a way removed from Gaza in that way, even though it's really around the corner. And just to be able to host the South African youth is always a honor, and always a very special time to be able to connect, to be able to connect to youth from the school that one of my children went to and was very, very involved in, and had a fundamental role to play in the way his thought processes were molded and the character that he became. And just to have these youngsters there for us was enlightening because of where they had come from in the day and who they were. But as usual, South African kids, greatly well-behaved, just, pleasant. They were youngsters. They were, loud and all over the show. But once they got seated and listened and got involved, they were just fantastic. And an accolade once again to the South African Jewish community. Just amazing youngsters, thoughtful, sensitive, and really, really caring. And my son did say to me that, he's just spoken to youth groups from, in Europe, all over different parts. And he said, it's just so nice to speak to South Africans. They're so courteous, so well-mannered. And it's, sometimes we're very critical on ourselves, and it's nice sometimes just to hear positive feedback and to interact with our own kids and just to be so proud of them and so proud of the parents and the community that have allowed these children to grow and flourish in the milieu that they have, in the schools that they have, so that when they come to Israel, they can benefit to the utmost from the experience, and people can say, there goes the South African kid with a sense of pride. But from a business point of view, what struck me once again was that tourism is coming back to Israel, and it's coming back in a really big way. We're starting from a very, very low base. I always feel like one of those economists who, are lauding certain economies where the base was so low that it was almost non-existent. And all of a sudden, we're getting 7% growth, and it's wonderful. Yeah, 7% growth after 10 years of no growth isn't that great, but it's definitely a start. Why I use that analogy is because if you look at the graph of Israeli tourism over the last while, it is absolutely scary. So if you look at the stats, if you read the papers, if you do the research, you'll see the pandemic and war written together with the slash between them. Pandemic slash war and what it's done to the Israeli economy. Since 2020, the Israeli economy, from a tourism point of view, has battled to get onto its feet. Tourism is not the main staple of the Israeli economy. We know, thank God, there are many other strong and buoyant economic factors and players that contribute to the GDP, but tourism is definitely one of it. And as Israelis, what's so important about tourism, besides the money that's pumped in, is that we want the world to see our country. We want the world to see the center of the earth, the home, the beginning, the genesis of everything that happens around the world. Jew and non-Jew alike, we welcome them with open arms. What that does is that creates ripple effects in the income streams of so many different areas. And what I'd like to do for you today is just to break down, just from what I saw from the group yesterday and then the research I did today, as to how many different income streams are generated from those youngsters coming to Israel. So first and foremost, let's start at the very, very beginning. It is, I don't know what your word to use, it is prohibitively expensive. These parents have forked out a huge amount of money in order to give their children the privilege of being there. I was talking to my son Hanan, who came on this program 7, 8 years ago, came for 3 months, and I told him what we paid then. And I said to him that my wife and I and our younger children gave up a December holiday in order to send him, and we have absolutely no regret. That was the choice we made, and we did it proudly. Parents now are sending their children for 3 weeks, and it's 30,000 rand more than it was 7, 8 years ago for 3 months. Just to show you how things have gone up, how things cost a lot, and South African rands, you just need lots of zeros to get the wheels to turn. It's a very interesting dynamic. It's a weaker currency, and you see it in so many ways, even though it has a lot of advantage. Just those children coming automatically creates a robust tourism sector in South Africa itself. Someone had to be employed to put that together. A travel agent had to be employed to make the group come together as a cohesive group, in the sense that ran, that all the logistics were there, all the visas if they needed were in place, all the travel itineraries, all the medical requirements. So that's already a major employment opportunity in South Africa itself. Let's take a quick break. It's nearly 20 past 12, and when we come back, we will continue to talking about the tourism industry in Israel.
This is RV on Business.
Welcome back to 101.9 Chai FM. And just before we go back to tourism in Israel, just to let you know, excuse me, technology, I'm just waiting for it to open, that the Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for adults offers convenient and professional help to help you manage your health risks. Whether you are having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offers you a broad range of health screening services. These include female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside your closest Dis-Chem pharmacy. Better health starts here. And coming back to Israel and tourism, and just the concept that I hosted a group yesterday, and I just looked at the various role players and then did the research this morning as to how many people and how many streams are affected. So we spoke about the logistics and the travel agents in South Africa. Then you obviously got the airline. The airline, this particular group used Emirates. I know it's Emirates or Ethiopian Airlines. I personally often use Ethiopian for two reasons. Number one, they fly a lot more frequently and there's a lot more choice. And number two, they tend to be cheaper. And if the layover is short in Addis, it's really not a big story. But there's the airlines again, boosting ticket sales. 60 sales, 60 tickets in one shot, and there's another group coming in next week with another 60. So there's 120 tickets straight through to Israel that weren't happening prior to this for the last year, 2 years. Then you've got your ground crew here in Israel. You'll find that with these groups, that the ground crew train tends to be the same. You'll have the same bus coming from the same bus companies. The same bus company will supply two or three or four buses. You will have a bus driver who, up until now, has maybe been put on short time or maybe has actually been retrenched and is called back only when, as and when needed. That is a very, very important thing to understand because these bus drivers, when it comes to these big tour buses, it's often their career. This is what they do. They are paid handsomely for the responsibility that they carry. But they rely on it being full-time and consistent. Otherwise, one cannot really make a living. Same thing with the bus operators. A little bit of research that I've done is between the cost of maintenance, the cost of insurance, and the cost of fuel. The bus needs to work. If it's not working, it's a dead loss. And that's why it can be a profitable business or it can be incredibly onerous with the overheads that are there on an ongoing basis. When you come back to the group itself has three main pivotal people that will work with it. Number one is a logistics manager, someone with a lot of experience, someone with who's been in the tourism business industry for a long time and puts all the tours together. So that's basically not a full-time job, that's someone who's employed for a good 3 months in the year in order to put a tour of 3 weeks together. Then you've got the tour guides themselves. They are more hired for the actual event that happens. They spend the time with the group. They do go home from time to time. It's not 3 weeks full time, but they know that they're employed for 3 weeks at this particular time. Then with that comes security. Requirement is that there should be security with every group that happens. Again, these are people who rely on this work to be busy with tour groups. They're usually hired by the tour company or by the logistics organizer. People know each other and they put these groups together. And these are people who are now relying on this group happening. So those are the people that you see. You see the tour guide, you liaise with the logistics manager, and you see the security person roaming around when they come. And if you're talking about two buses, you can double the security and the tour guide because each bus will have one. So it creates a whole wheel of economic chain effect that starts to turn. And then all of a sudden, you start looking in the background. When you drive around Israel, there are big garages on the side of the road like we have in South Africa. I must say, not as nice and not as plentiful. But there are also little kiosks, makolet, as we call them, little shops that sort of rely on the passing foot trade. Places like Yerushalayim, Jerusalem, especially in the busy places like Machaneh Yehuda Market, the Old City, these shop owners rely on the passing foot trade to make sure that they are able to keep the doors open and pay the rent. And when that foot trade goes down, their day-to-day turnover drops because local residents there will buy necessities from them, but they won't buy staples. Staples you can have delivered just like you can in any other first world economy. And it's really the shop that is available for convenience and for these youngsters to come by and buy the novelty ice cream and chocolate and chips and cold drink and whatever other gadget they're looking for. So these small shops really, really benefit from these tourists coming in. Then behind that, you've got the big economies, things like fuel, things like companies who supply tires. Those also really are affected by the lack of tourism. A typical tourist bus will have 8 tires, could have 10 tires, could have 12, and those need to be replaced often, especially if you're doing more mileage, something that we don't really think about on a regular basis. Then it comes to the actual places. You'll go to certain tourist places. Let's take David City, for example, in the Old City. When tourism is down, you'll find they will have one or two tours a day. But when the tourism is what it should be, they'll be running tours back to back every hour. That affects how many tour guides they hire. That affects what stock they hold in their store. For example, if it's summer, how many water shoes they need for people that they know will buy. If it's winter, how many coffees are they going to sell? These are the small items that add up when there's volume. And these things are really important in order to plan. Yes, you can have last year's water shoes stock. That's not a problem. But you don't want to over-order perishables that are going to go off. On the same hand, you don't want to miss out on a sale that could happen if tourism is there. So let me put it all in perspective for you. If you look at the chart starting from 2019, 2019 was a time when tourism was really, really robust here in Israel. It was happening, it was buzzing. It was before Corona. I remember I was here for Sukkot and we went to the to Machane Yehuda market. I walked in and we turned around and walked out and just said to each other, "This is just not pleasant. This is just, it's an absolute tourist trap at the moment. We've got as much time as you want to come back when it's quieter." We hadn't made Aliyah yet, but we knew the area well. But there was just so much tourism. You could hear planes landing continuously. There was just this din of planes in the sky. I remember sitting with some friends on somebody's balcony that had a beautiful view. And one of them opened up Skyscanner and was just showing how many planes were landing. If you juxtapose it to 6 months ago, the only planes we heard in the sky were fighter jets. And every time we heard them, we knew something was going down. So in 2019, we had 4.6 million tourists. In 2020, that dropped by a factor of four to 830,000 tourists. Now, I can tell you that of those, a good chunk of them were parents coming to see their children studying here, people who owned property here and were coming for the Jewish holidays. So they weren't even your typical tourist who's going to come here and spend tourist money, so to speak. 2021, it got really, really bleak. It was towards the end of Corona. Things were bottoming out. People were nervous. People didn't have money. A lot of people hadn't been working. 400,000 tourists, almost nothing. In 2022, we had the COVID recovery and we had this sharp uptick of 2.68 million tourists. 2023 was even better. Just over 3 million tourists. And remember, 2023, we're talking up until the 7th of October. And it's approaching normal levels. We're within 10, 20% of where the levels should be. In 2024, we dropped down to under a million again. So the war caused a collapse. The collapse of 68% compared to the year before. But still higher than in COVID. So COVID was a bigger scare for people than the war. And then we've got this year so far. And this year so far, and only we're talking about quarter one here, we are up to about 0.6 of a million, 610,000. Take 610,000, that's close to 2.1 if everything is normal. So we're getting back to 22 levels. We're not at 2023 year levels, but there are certain barometers, and one of the barometers are youth. If the youth are coming back, it means that parents are confident that the country is safe for their most prized possession, and parents are comfortable to send their child back to Israel. And I found that absolutely fascinating when I looked at that. So if you look at the graph from 2019 to 2020, 2021 is an absolute collapse. Then there's a recovery 22, even more of a recovery to 23, a slump in 24, and it continues to go down in 25. But that's just because we've got a shorter period of which we're comparing, and I'm confident it'll go up. And the reason I'm confident is because I can hear the planes in the sky. I can see how easy it is to book a ticket. In the fact that there are airlines flying, not that there's availability on the flights. When one flies Ethiopia, you fly two legs. On each one of the legs, both there and back, we had empty planes. You know, where you toy up with yourself, should I spend the extra money on upgrading to business class? I'm tired, I'm exhausted, I need to work. And then when you get on the plane, you say, thank God I didn't, because you can actually have as many seats as you want in as a quiet environment as you want. It doesn't happen all the time. It's just not a great sign. It means that those are the planes that they fly on that route, on that particular leg, and they're just waiting for them to start filling up again. But the interesting thing is, if you have to go on an Israeli website now and look for accommodation here in Israel, you're going to battle. You're going to battle for two reasons. First of all, because the big chains and what's available is prohibitively expensive, even for Israelis. And I'll unpack that in a minute. And second of all, so many of the little tzimmerim, the little, you know, Airbnbs and places like that, places that people put their heart and soul into to create just a beautiful little place that they can rent out. A lot of them have collapsed. People weren't able to keep them running. They had to then rent them out as more long-term investments, a long-term rental, sorry, which is a lot less profitable than if you can turn the room over on a nightly basis or a more frequent basis. So it has become a little bit more challenging. What I did is I just did a little bit of research, and I just want to give South Africans an idea. If you wanted to go away for the weekend, so you wanted to go away Friday afternoon, so that's Friday night, Saturday night, and check out on Sunday. So you can have the whole Shabbat in the hotel, you can have dinner and breakfast, not lunch included. That's going to cost you, if you have all the little tricks in place, about 3,800 shekel. 3,800 shekel is going to cost you close on 20,000 rand to go away for two nights. Yes, it includes breakfast. And yes, it includes two dinners. Dinner extra is about 700 shekel. 700 shekel, to give you an idea, is about 3,640. I don't think I know any couple that can eat 3,640 rands worth of food, even if the only thing on the menu was caviar. It just shows you how, when I said the South African rand is a weak currency and it has its disadvantages, it also has its advantages. For 20,000 rand, you could fly yourself and stay anywhere in the country comfortably for a weekend. Whereas in Israel, that is the standard fare for a weekend. And again, that's with being a member of the organization, the hotel organization, and asking, you know, to have a little bit of Israeli chutzpah. And that was the prices I got. If one goes to a new hotel in the by the Dead Sea is really relatively close to Jerusalem. The hotels are a little bit further. But it's a pretty accessible place to go, and it's very popular in the sense it's tranquil, it's quiet, and the hotels are great. I've got a price for a new hotel of 7,707 shekel. I times that by 5.2, 40,000 rand for a weekend. I don't know what you're going to do. Make sure that you get good sleep. to get your money's worth. Have multiple showers. Don't stop eating. Stare at the view all the time. It's almost impossible to fathom that amount of money for a weekend. And yet here in Israel, it's not seen as extortion. It's seen as this is what it costs. And, people have limited time to go away. So when you look at things in balance, the tourism industry here is in Israel is really geared at tourists who are coming from strong currencies, the dollar, the pound, the euro. They tend to find it a lot more affordable, even though they do say it's not cheap. Countries like South Africa, South American countries really, really battle. And the Russians, because their currencies are relatively weak compared to the shekel, and therefore accommodation like this becomes relatively expensive. You'll find that a lot of Israelis will find it a lot cheaper to fly to places like Cyprus, Greece, Estonia, Latvia, and go away for a week for almost a similar price that they could pay here in Israel. For people who keep kosher, there's often a little bit of a logistical planning that has to go into it, but there tends to be a lot around and a lot that's available. Places like Italy are a hop, skip, and a jump away. The flights are not that expensive. It's just the logistics once you're there. And I say that because for South Africans, places like Cyprus and Greece and Italy, unless you come from, your family comes from those parts of the world, and you travel more frequently, they bucket list destinations, but they tend to be a lot more homely over here because they're so close. And just before we go to the break, let me just tell you that people keep asking, what's new at Chai FM? Well, quite a lot. New management, fresh energy, bigger ideas, and the same. And hosts who refuse to behave. Gotta do my best. Wednesday, November the 19th, from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m., is the Chai fundraiser. One day, 12 hours, and a whole lot of community spirit. Join us for our fuel, the frequency, sorry, join us for our Fuel the Frequency campaign and help us power Chai FM forward. So there are a lot of Fs over there, and I've got a little bit tongue twisted. But just before I say goodbye, because we are running out of time soon, and Craig, please just bear me a few more minutes. I would just like to talk from my own perspective about this Chai FM fundraiser. I know that at South African Jewish community, generosity is just part of the spirit and part of who you are. And your thought may be there are so many other more important causes. So many other fundraisers that are happening at the same time, and so many other organizations where you can see the benefit directly to those less fortunate or those more needy. I just want you to take a step back and let me share with you the experience that I've been privileged to have with Chai FM over the last many, many years. First of all, a lot of people like myself do this out of a sense of pride for the community, a sense of giving back to the community that gave us and helped us to be who we are, and we ask nothing for it. But most importantly, there are hundreds of people in our community who listen to Chai FM every second of every day. It is their compass, it is their barometer. It is their friend, it is their counselor, it is their lifeline. They listen, they engage, they connect, and they feel part of things. They look forward with anticipation to Friday programming for Shabbat, listening to the different talks, listening to the different perspectives. They hang on to every word about reports from Israel, what's happening. They listen with interest, even though they might feel totally disconnected to shows like myself, business, economy, commerce. It's not their world anymore, but yet it keeps them company. It gives them something to look forward to. And therefore, by being part of the fundraiser of Chai FM, You're not just giving to another organization. You are allowing hundreds of our friends, parents, cousins, community members to feel engaged and connected, to wake up in the morning to the sound of Howard's joy and fun and insightfulness. They might agree, they might disagree, but that's why they engage, to decide whether they're going to or they're not going to agree with him on that day. And that's what it's all about. It's about making sure that this radio station can continue to be the proud only Jewish radio station in South Africa, together with the so many onlys that we have. We only have one chief rabbi. We only have one Av Beit Din. We only have one Beit Din. We only have one Kashrut authority. And we only have one South African Jewish community that is cohesive and together. And the Chai FM is almost the melody that allows us to dance in tune and to be in step with one another. So please, let's make sure we give generously. Let's make sure we allow this privilege that we have, started by Kathy, with sweat and blood and personal dedication that few people will ever understand. And if nothing else, let's do it for her. To turn around to one of the absolute rocks of the South African Jewish community, to Kathy Kehler, a young lady with no means, with almost no experience, but a massive heart and huge commitment, made Chai FM what it is today at a personal price and sacrifice that is unmeasurable. As a community, we owe it to her, and we owe it to her children, who were there without a mom at times because she was there for us. And to the Kathy and to your children and now your grandchildren, thank you. No words, no sound waves, no music will ever say thank you enough for what you've done for Klal Yisrael in South Africa and around the world. And please, God, and the time of Chanukah coming up now, where God's miracles are revealed, may you be able to spend many, many happy years with your family, your son, your daughter, their families, just basking in the knowledge that you created something in South Africa that changed the face of South African Jewry, that has become part and parcel of who and what we are. And may everything that you be put in be paid back to you tenfold in only a good and a clear and a revealed way. As always, that's it from me, Craig. Thank you so much for pushing the buttons, always making sure everything runs smoothly. Everybody, just to wish you a Chodesh Tov that's coming up on Friday, and we will speak to you next week.